Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Y'all get the guns, the drugs, for my generation, I'll take the fall. The state, and across the nation, and it's a sin. The guns, the brains, the fraud.
You know, don't get me wrong, I love the Union Underground, but unfortunately, I have an early morning tomorrow, so we're going to go ahead and skip the formalities today. Well, at least Woo-hoo. The musical formalities. Hi, everybody. Remember me?
Hi,
hey,
Dr.
everyone.
Nick. Harry here.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Dr. Nick.
Thank you. Finally. God, nice to have someone with some taste on this podcast for once.
I don't know if taste is the right word, but at least I understand references.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome in to the March 5th edition of The Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. The voice that you're hearing is that of the third man, Andrew Ballas. Unfortunately, as I may have made mention of in our preview here, much the same way that I missed last week's show spending time with my better half, Tony is missing this week's show spending time with his better half, by which I mean alcohol.
It's a good joke.
The life of a bartender, everybody. What can I do? No, in all seriousness, Tony has a Jameson Gala or something. He gave me the specifics for it, but I don't remember them, possibly because I may or may not have been drinking too much root beer. I stick to the soft stuff. Anywho.
Okay.
So,
I'm going to question that one.
I'm going to hope that we're going to go ahead and get Tony's predictions in for later on in the show. But other than that, yeah, maybe Tony will be back next week. All right, so let's go ahead and get into tonight's episode of The Reaction, shall we, Andrew?
I mean, I guess that's kind of the point of the show, so we might as well.
We could talk personal lives for a few more moments, but I have an early wake-up tomorrow morning, so I kind of want to get this done and put to bed as reasonably paced as we can.
All right, then stuff happened. Nothing of consequence really happened, so we're done. All right, have a nice one. Good night, everybody. Bye.
Thank you, Vietnam! All right. Anywho.
All right, not that quick. Okay, I got you.
Our opening promo scheduled for 20 minutes because WrestleMania season is Kurt Angle, the general manager of Raw. Angle comes out and talks about the fact that at the end of last week's episode of Monday Night Raw, towards the end of last week's episode of Monday Night Raw, I watched most of it. I was admittedly only half-heartedly paying attention, obvious reasons. Triple H laid him out with a sucker punch, which led to the internet memeing the crap out of Kurt Angle in that moment.
He's
going to punch me, but I'm not going to see it coming.
I mean, it was because of Angle's derpy face that made the meme so easy, because his hands in his pockets, his goofy looking up in the sky kind of face, it was too easy.
He had Barney Fife off Shuck's face.
yes, basically.
I popped myself with that. Anyway. So he talks about Triple H smacking him one in the schnoz, and then he calls out Triple H to settle this like men. Stephanie comes out because apparently she wears the pants in that family. Frankly, I believe that at this point. And talks about the fact that Triple H isn't there and that Kurt needs to watch his tone because he has to continue to make money to support his family. This despite the fact that Angle could go anywhere in the wrestling world. But we're not supposed to believe that. This world only exists in the WWE. Anyway. So that leads to Ronda Rousey coming out in this segment, kind of turning into a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
Because A, she seemed really rushed after spending the better part of about 2 minutes making her way around ringside slapping hands with every fan except for one. Fuck you, guy.
Yeah, she never got back to him. That was rude.
No, she did not. And then B, them rushing the announcement after working up to it that Ronda Rousey's contract that she signed back at the Elimination Chamber, for those of you paying attention, was that, excuse me, Ronda Rousey's contract that she signed back at the Elimination Chamber also stated that she could face whoever she wanted to under contract at WrestleMania as long as it was not a champion and they were on the active roster. So, after a drum roll that is terrifically too short, Ronda Rousey rushes her line and says she's facing Stephanie. Your thoughts on the execution here, Andrew?
Yeah, it was terrible. But, I mean, what do you expect? I mean, I partially blame Stephanie. And that's only because Ronda was obviously waiting for the drum roll to cue her line. And Stephanie played into the crowd doing the drum roll as, oh, that's awesome. That's wonderful. So Ronda probably took that as like a kind of impromptu cue of, oh, there's the promo. There's the drum roll. You're playing into what they're doing. So I don't need to actually wait for the audio. And then it just came off really, really rushed and stupid and, You almost didn't hear it either because she didn't say it with – she didn't punctuate her point at all. She just kind of was like, you, and then dropped the mic or at least put it down to her side. And then that just preceded the clusterfuckery when Triple H shows up and Kurt Angle decides to call him out on, wait, I thought you weren't here. I know, but it's all one thing. So this – You need to wake up early in the morning, so let's just get through it, you know? You know, Kurt called him on his bullshit. Kurt called him on his bullshit about I thought you weren't here. Then Triple H is like, well, yeah, don't be concerned where I am. I guess I am here, haha. And it just it devolved into I don't even know. It's like I guess Triple H thought he was like the wizard from the Wizard of Oz. Like, don't look at the guy behind the curtain. I'm not really here. Shut up. Oh my god. That's it. I don't know, because it felt like it was a bad movie or just like Twilight Zone-ish. That was just a bad – it was a bad promo, but somehow that was also Kurt's best promo of his entire run as GM because he wasn't tripping over words. He wasn't pronouncing WWE stupid. He actually had a little bit of an edge, a little bit of attitude, and you bought into what he was saying. Just the entire setup was bad and the little – scuffle at the end when, you know, Kurt puts him in the knee bar, you know, ankle lock into grapevine knee bar, ankle lock, whatever he actually wants to call it. And then Ronda grabbing Stephanie and then dropping her, which, I mean, it was like a fireman's carry fallback slam kind of thing. And it was a good picture because you could see her face. You could see Stephanie propped over her shoulders. But, like, I hope that's not her finisher because that's a weak, stupid-looking finisher if that's going to be the finish.
In wrestling, we call that a Samoan drop, Andrew.
No, because a Samoan drop is more across your shoulder blades than it is across your shoulders. The shoulders, that's called a fireman's carry because that's why everybody yells at John Cena that his finishing move is just a fireman's carry slam.
I mean, technically speaking, it is a fireman's carry slam. Anyways, regardless here.
If we want to be nitpicky, let's be nitpicky.
can I also say that I guess I am here. Haha. Apparently you turned Triple H into Snidely Whiplash, which was hysterical.
I mean, that's kind of what he was coming off as.
I feel like we're going to try to work as many 70s TV show references into the show as humanly possible now.
So at least we're playing to a demographic. I'm not sure which one, but it's a demographic.
It's not the demographic. It's not a good demographic. It's not a bad never mind.
Oh, God, don't do that. So what did you think about this clusterfuck of a promo into a little scuffle?
I think that giving away Stephanie getting Samoan dropped, or whatever you wanted to call it, on Raw was a bad idea. I think that having the guys physically interact with each other was fine because it's Kurt Angle versus Triple H. It's nothing we haven't seen before. Granted, this is the first physicality we've seen from Kurt Angle since the TLC clusterfuckery with everything being switched around at the last moment. But that being said, I think that giving away the Ronda attacking Stephanie tonight was a mistake. If anything, after Stephanie snuck back into the ring and formed Ronda from behind, she should have ran like the scared little bitch she should be portrayed to be being of Ronda Rousey.
Agreed.
That said, I will say that I like the fact that Triple H kind of broke up the fact that Ronda was going to armbar Stephanie because I feel like that has to be the finish for the tag team match, does it not, at Mania?
Yeah, I mean, that's what everybody wants. That ties the thread from a couple Manias ago, so that has to be. So you have to protect the finish at least.
All right, that takes us forward into our opening contest scheduled for One Fall.
One Fall!
As Asuka takes on Nia Jax in an Elimination Chamber rematch. Reminder, everybody, if you don't watch the pay-per-view undercard, it's okay. You'll get it on Raw a couple of weeks later anyway.
True.
And this turns into a pretty decent little match here. Asuka once again picks up the win. Not that that should really be a surprise to anyone, but Nia more than holds her own here, and they have a pretty competitive match, at least in my opinion, on par with the match they had at Elimination Chamber. In the end, though, as I mentioned, Asuka does pick up the win, tapping out Nia Jax at 11 minutes and 5 seconds with the Jujigatami, the cross arm breaker.
Mm-hmm. These are facts.
Your thoughts on this contest?
The finish reminded me a lot of the Dragon Gate finish from this weekend for the Open Dream Gate title because it was the same thing where the guy was stuck in a triangle armbar, Jujigatami, whatever you really want to call it, and the guy ended up passing out instead of tapping out. But it was very reminiscent of that. But aside from the little Dragon Gate plug right there, I mean, the match was what you expect from these two now, unfortunately. Like, Naya's apparently stronger than Asuka remembers from T in their first match on Raw, so Naya's just going to throw her around, and Asuka's going to try to find a way to chop her down and catch her in some weird position, and then shit happens. I mean, okay. I mean, it was all right. Like, it was nothing to write home about, but it was fine.
Do you want to go ahead and cover the segment a little bit later on in the show right here since it kind of ties in?
Ooh, which segment? Which segment?
Alexa and Nia backstage.
I mean, we might as well. I mean, that was confusing also. So let's keep that together.
Well, I think I understand where they're going with this. They're trying to make Nia look sympathetic because it looks like the rumored Asuka jump to SmackDown to take on Charlotte for the SmackDown Women's title at Mania is happening. And their backup plan for the Raw Women's title at Mania is Alexa versus Nia. I don't understand how you can have Nia lose 3 straight matches against Asuka, 2 of them clean as a whistle, and then still somehow manage to negotiate your way into having Nia as the number one contender for the Raw Women's title.
The weirdest thing to that whole promo to me, though, was it wasn't Nia necessarily ingratiating herself to being sympathetic with the fans. It was Alexa cutting a, like, backhanded compliment veiled kind of big promo at her to turn Nia face. And I don't think I've really seen that where the heel, who's supposed to be the friend of the other one, is pointing out all of these, you know, flaws in the person or all these personality quirks that they're supposed to rise above and how it sucks that they're, you know, getting judged or held back and yada, yada, yada. And the heel turns the other heel face because of a sympathetic situation. Like, it was weird. It wasn't necessarily bad. Like, I didn't hate it, but it was confusing.
I get the whole ideation of bigger equals beautiful with Naya, what they're going for with that. I mean, you're seeing it kind of a trend in modern society elsewhere as well. Take a look at this year's issue of the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. You'll find out what I mean. There are a lot of plus-sized women compared to previous issues, well, compared to previous Sports Illustrated standards. So, I mean, I understand where they're going for, kind of looking at the sympathetic look for Naya and that are there. I just don't view how people are going to consider Naya as a sympathetic face in a match against a woman that she's almost 150 pounds heavier than.
Yeah, I don't disagree there either, but they're not playing with house money when it comes to logic in the women's division, since, you know, Asuka beat Naya two or three times before Elimination Chamber, and yet suddenly Naya ascended to, like, this next level to challenge Asuka, like, not only at Elimination Chamber, but then also 8 days later, you know, tonight. So it's really just whatever story they feel like telling. They just ignore the past and tell the story they feel like. And it's intellectually insulting, but it's WWE.
Our second contest on the evening scheduled for one fall.
I'm not doing it again.
Yes, you are. Dance Monkey.
No, just say what the match was. Do it.
Man, I need a sound effect then. You're going to make me have to get another sound effect, damn you. Not that Greg ever made the ones we asked for originally, DeMarco.
Yell at him. It's Greg's fault. We just need that. That needs to be our soundbite. Just, it's Greg's fault.
That used to be a soundbite, actually, anyway. non-title as the Raw Tag Team Champions Cesaro and Sheamus, otherwise known as The Bar, take on Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder, otherwise known as The Revival. Your finish at the 9-minute and 20-second mark sees Cesaro hit Dawson? Question mark?
I think it was.
With the neutralizer. And The Bar wins this contest here, thus continuing their "we have no competition for WrestleMania" story arc. A little surprised to see this first-time-ever match given away on Monday Night Raw, but then again, it's the tag team division. It's not like they really give a shit.
Ding, ding, ding.
Somewhere, Jimmy C is very disappointed by this all.
But that's not me, so whatever.
Your thoughts on the match itself?
I felt like it had a lot of potential to be good, but there was also a fairly long commercial break somewhere in between there, if I remember correctly. And then the match just felt awkward and then finish. Well, there were two things, like that weird, like, what the hell was it? The superplex into the frog splash, which, that's weird because I thought
the
Revival
glory
was more. Yeah, but they don't do that often, so it's one of those things where it's still weird for them to actually do stuff off the top rope together when they kind of go against that. Even though, yes, it's an older kind of move, I know, but still, it's odd. And then the finish was just, I thought the Revival would get the win. I really did, because that was a logical step to who could challenge, and now. Now I have no clue what's going on with the tag division because we are not going
to
be the Hardy. Go.
Not to mention they seem dead set on having champions lose non-title matches on Monday Night Raw lately. So apparently the only way that actually happens is if your name is The Miz and Alexa.
That's why you just have to be the unliked heel champions because, you know, Triple H and Sheamus go way back, so they're definitely liked.
Well, I mean, Titus and Apollo did beat them on Raw 2 weeks ago, so I guess I'd rather lose to Finn Balor and Seth Rollins than Titus O'Neil.
Yeah, but then they got destroyed in that 2 out of 3 falls match last week, so that kind of cleared up any kind of question marks.
Brappadoo! Really?
Yeah,
we have to discuss
okay.
this again?
We don't have to.
Like, John Cena showed up. He talked about Fastlane. It was basically a 10-minute plug for this Sunday's Fastlane. There you go. Segment wrapped up.
Well, not quite. Not quite. Put a golden bow on that segment. That just made it weird.
What the gold dust?
Yes. With a nice On the Waterfront reference, though. I did appreciate that, even though that's not even 1970s reference. That's what, like 1950-something? So we're really getting older in our demographic. Yeah, but I'm just saying our demographic is slowly slipping to, like, you know, baby boomers. Let's try to make some kind of recent-ish reference.
at least we're not dealing with these goddamn millennials.
Okay, we still sound old that way.
Fuck it. Know your role and shut your mouth, Andrew.
All right, that's at least
there,
slightly more relevant. There we go. All right, hooray.
90s. Happy?
A little bit.
Okay,
I mean,
seriously.
We could ask the Wheel of Morality to turn, but...
Seriously, Goldust and Cena, because people were clamoring for that? Also, is it just me, or did Goldust choke during that promo tonight?
It felt weird. Like, it wasn't smooth.
That's what I mean.
Again, it's also Goldust.
Well, I guess there's a certain level of roughness expected from Goldust when he's on the microphone. But you would think that when you're having him in the ring toe-to-toe with a guy like Cena, that he would want to be at his best in order to establish himself, even if this is the tail end of his last run with the company, that he's still somebody to be taken seriously, and that Cena picking up a win over Goldust, which he does in our next contest, pinning him with the attitude adjustment at 3:47, that he's somebody to be taken seriously rather than somebody who John Cena is going to beat with pretty much no second thought at 3:47.
I don't think that was the point, though. I don't think we were supposed to build up, like, our suspension of disbelief to actually think Goldust had a chance. It was just Goldust was, I guess, clinging for some degree of relevance. And the good thing about his promo and possibly why it came off so odd and rougher than usual is that it went from complimentary, and it almost seemed like he was going to offer to be the director of Cena's big, you know, comeback tour, or his attempt to, you know, get to his mania kind of thing. It went from that to suddenly it went, you know, heel Goldust with the Shattered Dreams effect. So I think Goldust is just kind of stuck between multiple iterations of his character, and you see that a lot. Like when he did the rose gold thing with Mandy, you know, he went from the whole stuttering to or whatever the hell that was after he got electrocuted, to then he was, you know, the chomp, the old school Goldust, and then he goes back and forth. So it is what it is. I don't think anybody expected him to win, and if he did, I really want to know why, because it's Goldust.
I have no words about this match. It was there. John Cena wins. Brapadoo.
Brapadoo.
Ba-ba-da-ba. Anywho, moving on, as I go back to my recap to help keep me up to date on where I am, we have Elias come into Kurt Angle's office trying to get the match canceled. Kurt's not having that. Kurt's having a shitty night. Go away.
But it still sounded so good. Like, Kurt's actually in some degree of a zone. He's not in, like, weird GM dad zone where he's not knowing how to speak English and tripping over his promos. Like, he's actually been pretty decent when he speaks last couple weeks.
It's WrestleMania season, man. Most people get their shit together.
I mean, sure, let's go with that.
That's what I'm going with. All right. The newest WWE Hall of Famer is Hillbilly Jim.
Do you have a problem with that?
I thought Hillbilly Jim was already in the Hall of Fame. Oops.
Okay. Point.
Oops.
But still, do you have an issue with it in general?
No, not really. I mean, I understand the reasoning here. The Hillbillies were kind of one of those 80s wrestling tropes that got over through their own silliness, that to the point of, I believe, the Uncle Elmer's wedding on an episode of Saturday Night's Main Event drew huge numbers for a wrestling wedding at the time, and not only that, managed to do something that no wrestling wedding in history since has done, go off without a hitch.
That's actually a very good point. I didn't even think of that part. But, yeah, I mean, lots of people that after this was declared, you know, lots of people were complaining that, you know, he didn't win any, like, championships and there were no major accolades. But the gimmick was above titles. Like, it wasn't about how many championships they had. It wasn't about him being, like, a big single star. It was how he played into the WWE universe at that time, and how he played really well into, like, you know, the rock and wrestling and, you know, everything they were doing in the late 80s and the early 90s and, you know, playing towards kids and that whole thing. It's nice. It's definitely a good nostalgia trip for older fans. And, you know, if you actually paid attention to wrestling back then or used the network to actually catch up, you'd understand why he's relevant. But, you know, most people tweeting are like, you know, 20 and they remember the Attitude Era, maybe. So there's that.
I think a lot of it also just has to do with the fact that they wanted a reason to mention Hulk Hogan's name on WWE television again.
It could be. Oh, also hitting the internet wrestling community aspect. When was there such big love for Christian? Because starting, what, last 2 weeks ago or whatever it was, when Jarrett got, you know, announced, and then had this with Hillbilly Jim, everybody's major contention against these guys is, oh, they're all going in before Christian. Christian wasn't this over when he was a wrestler. He had to go to TNA to get respect and then came back, and then they gave him a couple pity runs in WWE. Like, where were all these people when he was looking for peeps and he's Captain Charisma and, you know, looking for, you know, fans of the Peep Show? Like, when the hell did these kids suddenly become Christian fans? Or is it just a nice, you know, bitching point?
Okay, A, if you're a fan of a Peep Show, that's your own personal business, and I do not choose to dwell on that.
Hey, you know what I meant. Continue.
B, I actually was one of those people that was a big fan of Christian back then here, but I think you already have kind of that 90s nostalgia wrestler for this Hall of Fame class with Jarrett. I think Jared's more of a hell freezing over situation too, whereas Christian will go in when the time is right for Christian to go in. I don't think there's a doubt that Christian doesn't deserve the honor, because he does. But, I mean, again, Coco Beware line and all. But at the same time here, it's like all these people that keep bringing these Victoria for Hall of Fame banners to Monday Night Raw and shit. Hello, Ivory's already been announced as the woman for this year. You're not getting two.
True.
Do you know anyone with a 414?
That may be Tunney.
Well, he's not there now, so I guess it's kind of irrelevant. If you're still listening, call us back, and I'll try to get you on air if that is you, PC Tunney. You message him, you ask him, we'll move on from there. Fair enough.
Alrighty, I will message him then, and then we'll go on and see where this leads.
All right. Our next contest, actually before our next contest, we have a little bit of an in-ring tete-a-tete between Charlie Caruso, Charlie, and Bailey, Bailey. As we get a kind of a discussion about why Bailey did what Bailey did last week on Raw with her walking away from Sasha Banks. Or at least we're about to get that discussion when Absolution interrupts and Paige cuts generic heel promo number 72, talking about that if you don't have friends, then you're on your own. And if you have no one, you have nothing. What?
But still, thank God. Still, it doesn't even matter. Paige could have just, you know, rattled off her grocery list. It would have been better than listening to Bailey try to construct a promo that wasn't like verbal NyQuil. Like, I cannot tolerate that character when she speaks. She's a decent wrestler. The actual progression it's taking with her actions and mannerisms is nice. but she still talks like an infant. So it's really, really, really painful.
See, I'm in the Corey Graves school of Sasha Banks bashing. I can't stand the chick. So give me Bayley over Sasha any day of the week.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Paige or, you know, any of them in Absolution, really, except, well, Mandy has potential, but you know where I was going with that. But Bayley, I just cannot tolerate her on the microphone. She is someone I wish would never talk. That's where she's at with me.
Speaking of Mandy Rose, the Golden Goddess is the opponent for Bayley tonight on Monday Night Raw. Bayley picks up the win with a roll-up. Imagine that. At 8 minutes and 45 seconds, post-match, a Absolution beatdown occurs. By Absolution, I mean Rose and DeVille, because Paige can't do shit, leading to Sasha Banks making the save. The important storyline development here is that afterwards, after Bayley and Sasha have a stare down, Sasha goes for a hug, and Bayley's like, nah, bitch, that ain't happening.
Yeah, that's about right. You okay?
Do you think this leads to... Yeah, I'm dying over here. It's cool.
Just checking.
Do you think this leads to Bayley and Sasha at WrestleMania?
It has to at this point. Like, they'll put on a good match. They've got a history of putting on good matches. And it's interesting because it looks like the dynamic could be Bayley as the heel, which I've kind of been hoping for like the last month or so since they started teasing Sasha having an attitude. But I wanted Bayley to be the one to turn. So that'd be nice if Bayley played a little more of the aggressive heel side, because we haven't seen that dynamic in their matches. But it would be a good match, so I really can't complain if it does happen.
I think I'm okay now.
We sure? You don't sound too great at the moment.
Oh, Jesus. Oh. All right. Sorry. I kind of agree with you on the whole Bayley heel dynamic. But at the same time, it also tells me about the state of creative in the WWE. When they take a character that was so money in NXT and have managed to ruin any and all semblance of its importance within 2 years of her call-up to the main roster.
Well, that could have also just been a more small town gimmick kind of thing, because not every gimmick that works in NXT is going to work on the main roster, because it just doesn't translate. Like, I think we've had this conversation about Elias before, but the opposite, where it didn't work in NXT, it didn't work with the smaller indie vibe, but then you put him on Raw and suddenly he's a star. It's, you know, the reverse Bayley, so to speak.
I mean, there's a whole lot of people you could say that about with Bayley, though. It's much more likely to go the way that it has with Bayley than the way that it has with Elias. Turns out that 414 is actually Tunney, who was at tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw Live. What's up, Tunney?
Gentlemen, it is snowing so bad right now. It's amazing, but the show was excellent, the crowd was decent, and the beer was cold. How are you, gentlemen?
To be fair, you live in Milwaukee. Snow's kind of to be expected.
You're right.
I like how
I
you graded it off of the beer, though.
I say this as somebody who lives in the Northeast himself over in Ohio.
So how did the show come across TV tonight? Was the crowd amped up, or was it good matches, or were the promos good? Because it's always a different animal in person.
Well, we're kind of getting our way through the show. We've actually just made it up to the Bayley-Mandy Rose match.
Oh, hi, Mandy.
I was waiting for you to say it. I'm so happy.
Sorry, guys. That's
I mean...
I'll just, you guys keep going, because I'll just distract the shit out of you otherwise, and maybe I'll jump in here and there. I'm kind of distracted by the snow. We're driving home right now, so I'll keep listening. You gentlemen sound like you've got a handle on things right now.
All right, we'll get the overall live perspective a little bit later on in the show, if you don't mind. Maybe you could do like a live perspective. Yeah, if you're not too out of it in order to do so, maybe you can give us like a live perspective, final reaction. I'll explain that to you when we get to that point. Fair enough?
Sounds good, guys.
All right, I'll be right back with you there. Let's go ahead and continue on with the show so we can get through this, Andrew. We already covered the Alexa Nia situation. That takes us to the Symphony of Destruction match, as you just previously mentioned, Elias here. And it is Elias and Braun Strowman with all kinds of musical-related weapons around ringside. And frankly, I'm fucking disappointed here.
Why?
Would you like to know why I'm disappointed, Andrew?
I did say why, so why?
Because there is no way, in my opinion, that this match should not have ended without a power slam through that piano. It was right there!
But he dropped the piano on him. It was all Looney Tunes and wonderful. Come on.
No. That needed a dropped that needed a power slam through the piano.
I don't know, because they actually played the piano, so actually power slamming him through that when it's completely actually together, that's not an easy feat. So I think they took the safer route instead of, you know, Japanese tabling the whole thing and the thing not breaking and just looking stupid.
Hey, you leave Japanese tables out of this, sir.
I mean, I don't like to talk about them because, you know, they hurt. But you know, it's the closest comparison I had in my head.
Wait till you come onto the business end of a Japanese table and see how they feel about you.
I mean, they're real tables. You've heard Jericho's interview with Omega after their match, haven't you?
I actually have not heard Jericho's interview with Omega. I have not listened to that episode of Talk to Jericho yet.
Well, long and short, he basically told them, he's like, hey, WWE uses like the sawdust bullshit tables. Can we use them? And then Ghetto was just like, no, that's not how we do it in Japan. And then Jericho's just like, fuck, that's a real table.
It's like those easy snap tables, kind of like the ones that they put out for their action figures.
Exactly.
Anyways, Braun murders Elias at 4 minutes and 55 seconds. Any other expectations from this match would be frankly irrelevant.
I mean, I was happy with all the Megadeth references. That's really where I was at with it. That's one of the few times I enjoyed Corey's, you know, commentary.
Corey, of course, shooting to get free concert tickets out of this because he's a goddamn professional.
Yeah, that's the word I was thinking about. Mm-hmm.
Elias gets stretchered out post-match because we got to continue making Braun look strong. I've heard that somewhere about somebody before. We're moving on. The greatest Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia, 50 people. What kind of cluster fuck and a half is this going to be?
I mean, they've already done 40. 50 can't be much different.
Yeah, but if you're doing minute and a half intervals, that's like 72 minutes in and of itself for entrances.
I don't know. I mean, it's something special for, you know, the Saudi crowd, which it's still a market that WWE is, you know, investing time and energy and money into. So good for them. It'll give the fans definitely a spectacle to enjoy. And they don't have anything to compare it to like we do. And I really doubt they're nearly as critical as most of us. So I'm just happy that they're going to be happy because they get to see a giant spectacle of just clusterfuckery.
Moving forward, we go ahead and continue with, as I pull my thing back up here, Bray Wyatt and Rhino, and I kind of wish I hadn't.
Why was your thing?
Because I now.
What are you doing? What kind of podcast is this?
Well, I have the studio pulled up in one window. I have Larry's Raw report pulled up in another window to help give me a full rundown here since I don't have a Tony format in front of me since Tony's not here. And I'm trying to send you a message on Facebook Messenger as well in order to not air on the air that I need you to call Tony back towards the end of the show so we can get his live perspective final reaction. But fuck that.
Well, that is
right there on air.
See, that was the whole thing because he sent me a message and said, the snow is bad, so have a good show. So that to me means that it's just too much to try to drive and talk at the same time.
Oh, well, okay, that works out then. Bray Wyatt and Rhino, we've now already spent more time talking about Bray Wyatt and Rhino than actually occurred on Monday Night Raw. Wyatt pins Rhino in 44 seconds. Great, they're building Wyatt up for a loss to Matt Hardy. Congratulations.
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
I'm in a mood tonight.
You kind of are. I mean, I'm
why.
Not against it necessarily. You're usually a little more positive and chipper about things and less cynical and salty, but I like this. I'm not against it.
I am minorly salty, much like the pretzel I had yesterday afternoon. Anywho. It looks like they're going to go ahead and bring the final deletion, the Armageddon, the whatever the fuck TNA wanted to call it thing to WWE, except they're going to call it Ultimate Deletion. And did you hear the pop when Matt Hardy mentioned the Hardy compound, BKA House Hardy?
Oh, yeah, that was amazing. And they always had a different name for whatever Hardy compound deletion thing was. So it's nice that they're continuing that. And hopefully it's going to be continued in the same vein that they did in TNA, especially since WWE has Jeremy Borash now, who is integral in, you know, the broken universe in TNA. So more of TNA deletion, less of House of Horrors, because that was garbage.
Inside of the promo that they talked about after Matt Hardy announced the next battle to occur at House Hardy, would be Vanguard 1, the drone, Skarsgård, the dilapidated vote, and video of the compound in general, including the Lake of Reincarnation. It appears that we are going to get all kinds of the crazy chicanery that we got in the TNA edition of it, just with a much larger budget. I'm not sure it's a good thing, but I'm willing to give this an opportunity to see where it goes.
Same. As long as it's done in the TNA vein and not in the House of Horrors vein, I'm perfectly fine with it.
The key to something like this is don't take yourself too seriously.
I mean, they've had the characters giggle at each other for like the last 2 months. I'm pretty sure they don't take it seriously.
Yeah. Okay, moving on.
Yeah.
Mizzy's part 3.
Yes.
That was a thing that happened.
Yes.
I mean, I enjoyed snarky announcer announcing the nominees. I thought that was pretty funny, but I thought Miz was pretty basic throughout this promo, not one of his better efforts.
No, he definitely sounded like he was pointing it in a little.
Well, at least until the end of the promo when he actually started addressing Balor and Rollins one-on-one, and then much more so once Balor and Rollins actually made their way out onto the stage as well.
Yes, sure. It did pick up at the end.
Where we do see first Rollins and then Balor immediately thereafter come out to kind of put an end to the Mizzies, to play them off, as Seth Rollins put it there. Miz then takes shots at Rollins for being the 65-minute man and then being the guy who turns in a great performance at the Elimination Chamber but doesn't win either match, and Balor for being the guy who loses the Universal title a day after winning it and is attempting to get over on the basis of a hand gesture that doesn't even belong to him.
Uh-huh. Those are all things that he said.
That's snarky, Miz.
I mean, it's nice, but the little meta twist with the digs, like when he's speaking truth, he's speaking truth. It's really hard to boo the man.
Miz says that since last week was basically a 2-on-1 against Miz, how would they feel about finding out this week that it was going to be a handicap match in the opposite direction as Miz, Dallas, and Axel take on Rollins and Balor? To be fair, Axel and Dallas together equal about a person, so this is a straight tag match.
You're giving them exactly one person? I would have said less than one person, but okay. That's nice of you.
Well, Bo is a former NXT champion, so credit where credit's due.
I've got things to say, but let's just keep moving.
11 minutes and 10 seconds later, and once again, despite the fact that he has Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel in the same goddamn match he's in, Miz eats another pinfall on Raw as Seth Rollins pins Miz with the curb stomp.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I I don't dislike Balor and Rollins winning this match because it does set up the triple threat match for WrestleMania that gets announced right afterwards for the Intercontinental title. I dislike the fact that this is the third time in 2 weeks that Miz has eaten a pinfall on Monday Night Raw, and I almost feel like the only way to get around this is having Miz retain the title at WrestleMania.
I mean, that would be fine. Like, I don't know why that would be an issue.
Oh, no, I'd be perfectly okay with Miz retaining the IC title at WrestleMania. Plus, it gives him something to brag about, because if he holds onto the title after Mania, he gets closer and closer to breaking Pedro Morales' record.
Very true. And, I mean, I think last week with Tony, I brought up the fact that Miz's consistent losses on television for, you know, non-title matches remind me a lot of Honky Tonk's big reign when he lost, like, all of the house shows, but won every televised show or won every pay-per-view. So on a grand scale, he still looked like he was having a great reign and very hard to beat when it mattered. But then at the house shows, he was eating pin after pin after pin after pin. So this is kind of what it reminds me of with how often Miz is on his back.
To be fair, at house shows, Miz is probably still eating pin after pin after pin after pin.
It mattered more back then. That's why I was bringing it up.
Yeah, but you're the one saying we're already working in too many old school references here. How's Honky Tonk Man helping our cause?
I mean, I figured I'd just, you know, join in the chicanery. That's kind of where that one went.
All right. Our main event is a promo scheduled for... Never mind. As Paul Heyman comes out to respond to Roman Reigns, is it just me or did it feel like Paul kind of phoned this one in?
Up until he turned around, it really just seemed very generic. Then when he turned around, it felt like there was a little more to it. Still typical Heyman, but there was a little fire, and then Roman comes out to rebut. And it was not bad. I was very, very happy with the way both sides went and how that whole promo ended up. What did you think?
The only line in the entire promo, and usually the Heyman promos are filled with several lines that leave you talking about and guessing about and wondering about and trying to digest in any of its different forms. The only line in this promo that I really felt that way about was the off of WrestleMania, you shall seek a new title.
Yes, I like the Wild Samoans reference, you know, thrown in there as an insult. Yes.
That was very enjoyable. I thought the rest of it was basically phoned in Heyman basic bitch 101, though. Granted,
but you said a bad word
Heyman
and they had to mute.
Well, granted, Heyman 101 is better than probably about 75% of the roster, but on a show that, in my opinion, was kind of lacking elsewise, it needed that extra oomph in this main event slot that I don't think it got from this Heyman promo. The Reigns rebuttal was interesting, especially since Reigns, while he had his share of detractors, he also had his share of people agreeing with him, so it looks like that kind of quasi-work shoot that they did with Roman last week is working to an extent. I don't think that this is going to be the match that people are going to care about at WrestleMania. I feel like they are in danger of looking at another situation like we did with Lesnar's last time saying goodbye at WrestleMania, where it's going to be WrestleMania 20 all over again for these two.
I don't think Lesnar would do that to Reigns. And I mean that in the simple fact that Lesnar has a very, very long history of not giving a shit about working with people unless he can draw money with them. And he just agreed to a rematch, basically, because if Lesnar didn't want to do it, he wouldn't be in the match, or Roman would have lost at Elimination Chamber. Brock's got some sway because he's Brock. So if Brock thinks this can be something, he's not, you know, what was that, 15, 14 years ago? So he was in his late 20s. He's not, you know, he's not a young idiot kid who's just like, screw it, I'm gonna go play football or go do whatever and screw wrestling. Like, he understands how the business works. He understands it's probably best for him to not screw up things so he can keep every door open, especially if the rumors of going back to UFC kind of fall through. So I don't think it's going to be as bad as Goldberg-Lesnar from WrestleMania 20. But, I mean, when it comes down to you and me and most of the smarkier IWC podcast personalities, writers, stuff like that, it's obviously going to be Nakamura or AJ Styles, assuming that happens, that people are going to be more invested in, just because that's the smarky darling kind of match right there. So there's going to be a slant between casual fans and more hardcore fans. But for the casual fans, I think Reigns versus Lesnar will play nicely, especially with Lesnar getting some momentum by actually having natural-sounding promos. And if you listened, even though the crowd was quiet at points during Reigns' promo when he was trying to make, like, when he was trying to get a pop and when he's trying to emphasize certain aspects, it was quiet, but there were no boos. It was just mild cheers, and the rest of the crowd was kind of taking in what he was saying. And I'll take that over, you know, deafening boo any day of the week.
Given the reactions to the from the crowd towards Reigns on the most of the rest of the season, and with regards to given the reaction to Reigns from the crowds, given the rest of the calendar year, yeah, I would say interest rather than indifference is a step in the right direction.
Exactly.
I smudged that all the fuck up, didn't I?
Yeah, but you saved it. I mean, even Miz tripped over his promo, so don't worry about it.
I'm going to blame the fact that I missed last week's show, so I'm a little bit rusty.
That's fair. I'll take it.
Okay. That officially ends tonight's episode of Raw, but before we get into our final reactions, we do have this little matter of a pay-per-view this Sunday to predict, as John Cena was so kind enough to remind us for 10 minutes on tonight's episode.
Yeah, and it's
definitely
going to
be
a
thing going
reminder.
Forward. That's going to be a thing going forward, just a heads up.
Okay, I'll make sure to just, like, you know, put earplugs in or something.
You're not doing the show through headphones? Anyway.
Thank God I'm not.
All right, so we got four matches to predict here because apparently we like to wait until the last minute these days for these B-show pay-per-views. Hopefully, once we go back to single pay-per-views, dual-branded, we'll start announcing more than four matches with less than 6 days to go until the show. We won't, but hopefully we will.
But Twitter...
Did you just say butt Twitter?
I did. I did, because that's probably exactly what WWE is thinking. But we need to tweet our stuff because it gets more social media and trending. Trending, trending, and social media, and social media, and trending. That's like their favorite word.
God damn it. Well, they do hype up their social media. They do hype up their social media interactivity a lot during Raw these days. All right, let's just get to these predictions, shall we?
Sure.
Going off the rails like a Ronda Rousey Elimination Chamber promo over here. Anywho.
Wow. That hurts.
I'm not wrong, am I?
I didn't think it was that bad, but sure, whatever. Let's get the train back on track. Go, go.
Women's title, Charlotte defends against Ruby Riott. I feel like this is the most obvious match on this show here. Charlotte retains.
That's right. Carmella cashes it. No, I'm joking. Charlotte retains.
I'm actually going to make my prediction known right now. Carmella cashes in on the SmackDown after WrestleMania and gets choked the fuck out by Asuka.
That's plausible.
Heard it here first. All right,
good prediction.
Moving on. Bobby Roode defends the U.S. title against Randy Orton, although something in me tells me that this does not remain a singles match based on the build-up to this feud. I somehow see Jinder Mahal weaseling his way into this contest. Either way, I think Orton gets the title that he hasn't had. I think Orton wins the U.S. championship.
I agree with you. I was going to say I think Orton gets the one he doesn't have. Plus, he's a bigger name draw for Mania. So having him go in with the U.S. title and maybe Rude gets a rematch, I think that would be fine.
See, I actually think they're going to do one step further than Rude getting a rematch. I think the U.S. title is going to be your multi-man match for going to be the ladder match for WrestleMania this year, and it's going to be the multi-man SmackDown match with, like, six of the SmackDown superstars involved in the ladder match for the U.S. title.
That's possible, too.
I mean, Orton's going to be pissed off about being in another ladder match, but hey, it's WrestleMania. You do what you got to do to get the payday.
Well, plus he checked his box already, given our playlist with him winning the title that he hasn't had. So what does he care how long he holds it?
Exactly. Moving on. That takes us to the tag team titles, as even though they're still on that day one-ish, they now have to defend against the longest reigning tag team champions in WWE history. The Usos battle the New Day.
I think you have to kind of give the New Day the win here, because I don't know what else you can do with the Usos aside from throw them against the Bludgeon Brothers, and I don't see how the Usos would live in that with the way they built the Bludgeon Brothers, and at least New Day's got Big E. So, yeah, I'm going to say New Day gets the win on this one.
I'm going to say the Usos retain, and then we see a four-team tag team match at WrestleMania where the Bludgeon Brothers take the SmackDown tag team titles. Bludgeon Brothers, Rusev Day, New Day, Usos at WrestleMania.
Plausible.
And yet they still won't capitalize on Rusev Day, because why would they?
Even though that would be a good
main
excuse
event,
to give the Bludgeon Brothers a loss.
Or at least have them not eat the fall but not win the belts either.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what I meant. Like, nobody's going to be pinning one of them, but at least they wouldn't win. So it would be a legitimate way to, you know, keep them away from the tag team scene, title scene, for a little bit.
I think we've actually seen flashes of brilliance between Harper and Rowan against the Usos before, back when Harper and Rowan were still in their Wyatt days as well.
I don't think we can count that, because they wrestle completely differently now.
All right, that's fair. I'll grant you that.
They are no longer
the way. We haven't
seen
them in the ring with any. We haven't really seen them in any kind of real competitive matches either. The only real competitive, you could say, match that they had was against Breezango, and that lasted all of about 3 minutes here. I think the Usos, and especially the New Day, would give them much more competitive matches than what we've seen thus far.
They would, but as we've kind of seen with the whole Asuka thing, when you have somebody dominate for so long and then suddenly you put them into like this litany of difficult match after difficult match, it gets awkward to watch, and the mystique of the Beast kind of goes away. So they really have to play this one carefully if they care at all about the Bludgeon Brothers team.
All right, that takes us to our main event, a six-pack challenge for the WWE title. AJ Styles defends against, let me see if I can do this from memory here, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, John Cena, Baron Corbin, and Dolph Ziggler. All right.
You got it, dude.
And now we're back into the late 80s, early 90s with a Full House reference.
Hey,
it's at least
the early 90s, so we got it. Stop. How rude.
Killing the town.
No, that's with Cyrus and Lance Storm. That's not us. Stop it.
Thank you for getting that reference.
I get many references.
Who you got in the six-pack challenge?
Oh, AJ, come on. What about you?
I'm going to pick AJ officially, but at the same time, I would not be surprised to see them have somebody beat AJ for the title and then AJ win it back on SmackDown.
I mean, fair. If anybody wins, it's not named AJ Styles, I'd like it to be Sami Zayn, but I still think AJ's going to win somehow.
I don't disagree that Sami's going to get there, but with Sami having other plans for WrestleMania, namely Kevin Owens, I don't think that you need to put a one-day title or technically a two-day title reign in there for Zayn to add anything to the Owens and Zayn issue that isn't already there.
Fair enough.
I wouldn't be surprised to see somebody like Ziggler come out of this with the pinfall in the title.
Oh, I hope not.
Just as a thank you to Dolph for re-signing for 3 years like he did.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That is WWE to just randomly hand out titles for stupid accomplishments. Or just because you've been here 20 years without a belt here, Mark Henry.
You leave the Hall of Pain alone. That shit was great.
It was a decent gimmick kind of streak for a while, but come on. It was still Mark Henry, and he was still there for like 15 years. If you didn't know what his shtick was by then, you must have been new.
They had to do something in order to justify the contract that Henry had.
Okay, that much I'll give you. Okay.
All right. So that's going to wrap up our fast lane predictions, and that's going to take us to the finish for the show so we can get out of here and I can get my tired ass to bed. It is now time for our final reaction, Andrew. Are you ready?
I guess so.
Might as well, right? I mean, it is the reason we guys are here.
Yeah, fair. All righty, let's get to it.
We sound as interested as Paul Heyman did during his promo tonight.
Well, yeah, I guess it will reflect in my rating, so I guess we have to get there.
You know what it is? I think it's the fact that we still have this last, I know it's called Fastlane, but you might as well just call it Speed Bump on the road to WrestleMania here. And here's hoping that starting next week, once they have the opportunity to go bam, bam, Monday, Tuesday, Raw, SmackDown, build towards Mania, push towards Mania, get there. Maybe we'll have more and more enthusiastic efforts from the talents involved rather than this kind of phoned-in one we had tonight. We'll talk about that more in the final rating, but I got a feeling our final ratings are going to be somewhat similar.
Probably.
Favorite match or moment on tonight's show?
Oh, I forgot. Okay, all of the Megadeth references, because I'm a big thrash metal fan and Megadeth is one of my favorites, so that. How about you?
I'm going to go with Sheamus and Cesaro against the Revival. I really, really was hoping that we would see a situation where, even if it was like by countout or by disqualification or some other bullshit fluky finish, that the Revival would have picked up the win here, because I would have no problem with these guys getting the opportunity to go out, even if it's on the WrestleMania pre-show, have 15 to 20 minutes on the pre-show and tear shit down in order to set the tone for what WrestleMania could be this year.
Agreed.
Not to mention, I have something of a man crush on the Revival as well.
Aw, how adorable.
A little bit. What about your least favorite match or moment on tonight's show?
Least favorite. I guess I can't say most of it, so I have to actually pinpoint a section that I hated. You know, probably my least favorite is that whole Alexa Nia promo, just because it was confusing. Like, yes, I kind of figured the point it was making and getting sympathy for her and all that other stuff and highlighting things, but it was so awkward and felt forced and just, I don't know, like, it's more confusion than dislike, but I still don't get it. How about you?
I'm going to go with my biggest what the fuck for the show, and that was the Gold Dust John Cena segment.
That's
like,
a good choice.
Really? Also. Why? And I know it's so cold can spout cliche after cliche. You know, we had our stats guys do some shut the fuck up. No, you didn't. You knew going in that this was a first-time match, despite the fact that Goldust has been around for fucking ever and Cena's been around for the last 16 years. You knew that going into this. You did not have your stats and research guys. Shut the fuck up.
But it said to say it that way on the script.
I am really salty tonight.
Yes, you are.
Love your hate, your faith loss. You are now one of us. All right, anyway.
Okie dokie.
Miseria Cantieri. Anywho, moving on. Scale of 1 to 10, Andrew, where do you fall?
I wanted to rate it slightly better than last week, but the more we talk about it, the less I actually liked it than last week. So I'm actually going to give it sub-average and just a 4.5 out of 10. How about yourself?
I didn't get to listen to the full show last week. I will be going back and re-listening to it in the downtime probably tomorrow while I'm taking care of what I need to take care of around here. So I'm going to say that I felt this episode of Raw was your basic average episode of Raw here. They didn't really advance anything other than getting us two of the matches that we kind of figured were happening for Mania anyway. I'm going to go with a 5.
Yeah, basically the same thing.
Like, I don't want to use the Roman cliche, if it wasn't a good show, it wasn't a bad show, but it was just kind of there, you know?
No, I do.
It didn't have that sense. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think Tony and I felt similarly about last week, where I think we both gave it a 5. And it seemed like there was a little more going on last week, and there was definitely more in-ring action because he had the back-to-back Miz matches and a couple other things. That's the only reason why I gave it a little less than average, because it really felt like everybody phoned it in, and it was highlighted by probably the Symphony Destruction match in general as just a giant moment, but nothing was overtly good.
It was another opportunity for Braun to shine there. That's all that was.
Correct.
Like, they realize what they have with Strowman, they're just not sure what to do with him most of the time.
I can agree with that.
Man, if that isn't this company's MO recently to a T.
Sad but true.
They know they have something, they're just not sure what.
Yep.
I think I enjoyed last week's episode more, but at the same time, Tony talked about the fact that we're going to be more open-minded about these shows going towards WrestleMania because this is our big season here. Well, in order for us to be more open-minded about these shows, you actually have to give us something for us to be open-minded about. You don't phone it in like this. You don't just have a B-show effort tonight like they did. You don't expect us to just shovel up what you're dealing out with us just because it's WrestleMania season. I'd like some effort inside of my stories here. So we've seen some blow-away shows in WrestleMania years prior. There have been a couple of shows recently in WrestleMania buildups that Tony and I have given 9s to. We need more shows like this, not shows like the one we got tonight.
That's almost word for word what Tony said about last week's show.
We've been doing this show for too fucking long.
I was thinking that. I'm glad you said it.
Starting to become an old married couple now, me and Acero. That's a scary thought. Anywho.
Won't he be happy? Vanessa might be jealous, but he'll be happy.
My question is, where do Jack Daniels and Jim Morgan fit into this equation?
I guess we'll have to figure that one out as we go along, right?
Yeah, we'll talk to Tony and we'll figure out roles here. Just remember, with the honey in the middle, there's some leeway.
Thank you for the Lonely Island reference. Now, don't we have another point to hit on the wrap-up? Come on.
I was getting our final reference of the show to be a bit more topical.
And that was a little more recent, too, because that was only like 10 years ago. So that was good. Good, good.
All right. And we finish it off with our overall show MVP here, and goddamn if this isn't going to be a difficult one because nobody stood out. Actually, you know what? One person did stand out here, so I'm going to go ahead and steal this for both of us. My MVP for tonight's show was Kurt Angle's performance.
Agreed. Yes, definitely Kurt Angle.
Usually I like to give my MVP to an in-ring performer here. Nobody's in-ring performance tonight really stood out to the point that I feel that they went above and beyond anybody else's. So I'm going to go with the fact that Kurt Angle killed his backstage segments and then was probably the best part of the four people involved with that opening clusterfuck.
Agreed. I mean, I'm pretty sure I put him over when I was going over things. So That's a good take on that one. Kurt Angle wins this episode.
We promise to be back and less salty next week. Well, maybe. We'll see. If they give us a reason to be, we will.
We promise to be back. We promise to be back. Saltiness is dependent.
Saltiness next week to be determined by the level of pretzel that they give us, huh?
Exactly. Cards subject to change. Remember, it's wrestling.
Vince McMahon's favorite four words.
Exactly.
So, for our unfortunately persona non communicado this week, Tony Acero, the third man, Andrew Ballas. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Thanking you for listening to this week's episode of The Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. We'll talk to you guys next Monday night with our rundown of the Fastlane pay-per-view and the official start on the actual road. We're no longer on the overpasses. And we're no longer on the exchangeways. I'm getting there, I promise. We're on the actual road to WrestleMania. Starting next Monday night. We'll talk to you guys then. Have a good one.
Fire, will it still see me? Will it lie?
Apologies for the double there, but had a couple of callers I had to take care of. This is Harry Broadhurst once again thanking you all for listening to this week's edition of the Raw Reaction. We'll catch you guys next Monday night on the official road to WrestleMania here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Have a good one, everybody.